Expect the unexpected. Jesus weaved that theme into his grand narrative about the end times. And Adventists, we have the very idea of end time in our very name, Adventists, right? That comes from the Latin, somebody's coming, and because we came out of the movement that expected Jesus to come in the mid-1800s, we stuck with that name because we still preach and believe that Jesus is coming again. And so Jesus talked about this end time, and the most famous chapters about it, besides the book of Revelation, are found in the book of Matthew in chapter 24. And when I grew up, I always thought it was just 24. I never realized that it was actually two chapters that comprise Jesus' narrative about the end time. It's 24 and 25. And where Jesus talks about expecting the unexpected is right in the middle. He starts out by talking about signs and so forth, and some people get really excited or used to get really excited about all these different signs that I mentioned, and it's not bad to study that. But the main meat of Jesus' answer in chapters 24 and 25 of Matthew is a little later. Towards the end of chapter 24, Jesus changes from signs to attitudes. What do we need to keep in mind as we look at the end time, or the time of the end, or nearing the end of human history as we know it? And he's beginning to try to explain this by using parables. And so I think it's in the 30s, Matthew 24, verse 30-something, he starts talking about that nobody knows when this is going to happen. Right? So, and that's an important verse to remember. And Jesus mentions this more than once. It is a very important idea to keep in mind that nobody knows when this is going to happen. Nobody knows the day or the hour and so forth. And weaved into these formularic verses of nobody knows, there is these examples. So Jesus says, because nobody knows, you have to be ready. He's using the example of a house owner who was burgled. And he said, if that house owner had known what time of the night, or what night actually, he would have been burgled, he would have stayed up and he would have prevented the burglary from happening. But because he didn't know. And he's saying, that's exactly how we are. We don't know when. There are certain grand time, you know, big signs, but they are not like the little green mileage markers on the interstate that are there every tenth of a mile. The signs of the times that Jesus and the rest of we find in the Bible, they are like those big signs overhead. They come every now and then. Now, so I'm traveling a lot on the Garden State and on the Turnpike. And so those big green signs, if there's many exits, then there's many signs. But when you're on the turnpike going south to where I live, once you pass exit 9, there's a lot of nice scenery. Because exit 8A is like 10 miles away. And then it's another 10 to 8. And then it's another 9 to 7A. And then there's another 8 or 9 or 10 to 7. That's where I usually come off. So there's these huge gaps and there's nothing there. So the signs of the times, they are like big general markers. He didn't give us fine details. The fine details is in the verses that you don't know when. So you have to be ready. And to illustrate that, Jesus starts. Or chapter 25, remember, this is just one big talk that Jesus gave, and then eventually some smart people decided to chop up the Bible into chapters and verses. That wasn't there when Jesus, you know, talked, and or when Matthew wrote it down. You know, didn't say, okay, this is a good place to stop and start a new chapter when we talk about the 10 bridesmaids. So to make this point of you don't know when, Jesus is using parables, and one of them, and the most famous maybe of them all, is the one of the 10 bridesmaids or 10 virgins. That's the beginning of chapter 25 of Matthew, first 13 verses. He's saying at that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins or 10 bridesmaids that are expecting the bridegroom. In those days, the bridesmaids were waiting for the groom to come and would accompany the groom to the house of the wedding where he would meet his bride. I know in our culture we do it slightly different, but that's how they did it then. There's something that was still the same. I'm going to come to that in a moment. And so in the parable, Jesus describes 5 of these 10 as wise and 5 of them as foolish. Something he'd done before, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, he's talking about a builder who builds a house. 2 builders, I'm sorry. One is wise and one is foolish. It's the exact same scenario and words that are being used here. So here we have 2 groups. One is wise and one is foolish. And it says that the wise ones brought their torches, but they brought extra oil. That's what distinguishes them from the foolish ones who only brought their torches. And I say torches because what this is, and when I grew up, I thought it was little clay lamps, you know, with a little light there. And I always wondered, this is an awfully small lamp for a grand occasion like a wedding. And plus, what kind of a tiny container did these wise virgins have that they brought extra oil for this tiny lamp and they couldn't share it with the other 5? You know, if you bring a container, like even if you have a soda can size container, you can split that in half and that gives you enough oil for 2 lamps, these tiny little lamps, you know. But then I read in a commentary that the Greek word doesn't talk about those tiny little house lamps. No, it probably refers more to a torch, a stick with cloth wrapped around it, soaked in oil and lit on fire. And now it made sense. You see, if you run out of oil in these torches, then the torch will go out, unless you have more oil. And in order to get the torch going properly again, you have to prime them, you have to pour enough oil on there. If it's just a little bit of oil, then it will quickly burn up, and then it will burn up the cloth, and it will create all smoke and smell, and won't look fun, and not good for a wedding anyway. And so now I understand why the wise bridesmaids said to the foolish ones, we can't share this, because if we do, then none of us have enough. All 10 of us will have torches that will just create a lot of smoke but no light. Jesus is teaching in this parable to be prepared. Prepared for what? Well, this is where the wedding in Matthew 25 that was modeled on a wedding that happened 2,000 years ago is similar to weddings today. I went to one the other day, and I was foolish enough to believe that maybe in New Jersey, weddings start on time. It was a Hispanic wedding, on top of that. But I thought, well, you know, she works for the Pathfinders. She must be, you know, surely this one will sort of step out of the cultural stereotype. But I should have known better. Even I was late for my own wedding. The only people that were on time for my wedding were my parents, because they're German. But their son had now lived with Jamaicans and other West Indians for so many years that he had lost some of that Germanness. And that's why I was an hour late for my own wedding. But I beat Barbara by 30 minutes. And so it was with the wedding that I attended the other day. Jersey City. It's late, man. It was late. And so it was with the wedding in Matthew 25. It was late. And this is what Jesus is trying to teach. There was something that happened that wasn't expected or that shouldn't have happened. 5 of the virgins thought, you know, he may be late. You never know. Bring extra oil. Okay. And other 5 were like, we got invited to a wedding. Yay! And didn't think about anything else. And then the bridegroom is late, And they all fall asleep. And so while they sleep, their torches go out. The oil is done. And now they are awoken. The bridegroom is here. Get ready. And now they realize, five of them are happy that they were prepared for that. And five realize that, oh, we did not expect this. Five expected the unexpected, and the other five didn't. Some people think that the sleeping has something to do with modern-day Christianity, that we are all asleep spiritually, but I don't think that is doing the text any justice. This is something that happens to all of them, the wise and the foolish. There is a situation or a condition or circumstances that apply to all of the believers in that parable, that applies to all of them. But what that does is it shows, it brings to the forefront, it exposes who is prepared and who is not. And that's why Jesus gives us that parable. Expect the unexpected. And so we usually preach this and, you know, make sure you have a relationship with the Lord. Yes, make sure you do. Because without that, anything else is useless. If Jesus comes again and we are strangers to him because we were more interested in the other zoology of the Bible, except him, then he will have to tell us with all that other knowledge that, sorry, I don't know you. We may know all there is to know about beasts and about other things in Scripture, but if we don't know the Lamb, then the Lamb will tell us, don't know who you are, sorry. And there will be people in the kingdom who don't know how to identify the first, second, or X beast in Revelation 12, 13, or wherever. There will be people who have no idea what to make of those weird creatures in Daniel 7 or how to connect these two books to each other. There will be people going up to be with the Lord because they knew him. And there will be Adventists. I hope it will be a minute number, but I've met one or two. So I can't be certain that it won't be none. I hope it will be none. Adventists who knew all this, but in their knowledge forgot to get to know the one who's most important. Because we were so engrossed in other things, debates, and stuff, that Jesus slowly was pushed to the side and sat there while we were so busy studying this and arguing that and having online discussions with this, that, and the other. I don't want to be like that. So that is the first point of this parable of the 10 bridesmaids, to be prepared to expect the unexpected. Of course, you need to know the Lord. But let me throw another thing in there. Something that came out of somewhere, it's mixed sport metaphors, you know, some kind of curveball. I don't even know what that is. I only hear it often. It's baseball, right? And the ball sort of doesn't fly in a straight line. You think it's coming this way, and then it ends up over here, and it's a strike. That's it, right? Oh, we got it right. Yay. It's a bit like, bend it like Beckham. You know, when you shoot it over the... Now coming back to something I know a bit more about. In football, when you have a free kick and there's a wall of opposing players, to get it into the goal that is behind the wall, you have to bend the ball, you have to give it a spin so it curves, it flies around, or it flies over. And the goalkeeper is over here and he thinks, oh, it goes over, I don't have to stretch myself. But too late does he realize that there's so much spin on the ball, it doesn't fly in a straight line. No, it's now dipping over and it's coming back down. And as he realizes and stretches himself out, oh, there goes the ball into the upper corner of the goal. So here's this thing that came out of nowhere. What if some of the scenarios that we expect, because we rely on stuff that was written 100 or 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. What if some of that doesn't happen exactly the same way we expect it to happen? And while we are over here thinking, oh yeah, it must be like this because so-and-so said and because this and this, you know, wrote many books, must be like this. Over here, stuff is being put together and put into place, and before we know it, it's there. And we are still debating, you know, no, and there it is, ready to hit us in the back. The parable of the 10 virgins reminds me to not be too certain about everything, but to be ready for anything. Now, before I go to my next text, just to throw a little bit of contemporary scenario in there with the announcement of the retirement of Justice Kennedy from the Supreme Court, there is another opening. And the Supreme Court of the United States will probably now be filled with people that will push it in a certain direction. Given the climate and given the current administration and given the obsequious behavior of the current administration to certain religious groups in this country, I am not surprised if the next Supreme Court judge that will be nominated and will be confirmed will be one that will push it over there. And here's the thing. Some of our own people will be like, yes, finally we can get rid of Roe v. Wade. Finally we can get rid of this and that and the other. There's a book that was written by TV personality. And in that book, he goes all over the place. No idea what the Constitution of the United States is, but believes that, you know, God's law must be upheld by the Constitution and so forth. We'll be happy when that happens. Not realizing that when that happens, we have not just walked a little step. We have done a magic, massive leap towards stuff that I was taught when I was a child. When I was a child in the 70s and 80s, and people were telling me, the United States this, and the United States this, and Sunday law this, and Sunday law that. And I'm like, huh? What, those United States? When I came to live here in 2013, I was like, yeah, that isn't going to happen for a while. I mean, look at it. But now I'm thinking, And what shocks me is not so much that it might happen, but that some of my brothers and sisters will be there cheering for it. That's what troubles me. And that brings me to my next text, our scripture reading. In John 18, Jesus is having a dialogue with Pilate. It's the only dialogue that has been recorded that Jesus gives during his interrogation and his trial. And in that dialogue, Jesus is telling Pilate, who wants to know whether Jesus is a king. In verse 36, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my followers or servants would fight to prevent my arrest. But now my kingdom is from another place." And that is another, maybe unexpected for some, maybe not, maybe totally expected for some, but that's something that as Adventists we need to keep on our forefront. We serve a Lord whose kingdom is not of this world. Well, fine, we respect and we're grateful for the country that we live in, that's why we have the flag, but we're not worshiping this thing. If it comes down to pledging allegiance to the Lord or the flag, the flag is a distant second, third, fourth, or whatever. God must always be first. Always be first, because there won't be any Americans on the new earth. There will only be humans on the new earth. There won't be any Mexicans or Iraqis or North Koreans. There won't be any Syrians or people from Honduras or Guatemala. There won't be any illegal immigrants. There won't be any other people but human beings on the new earth. And when Jesus says that kingdom is not from here, I am strangely challenged in my own thinking of who I am and what priorities I have in my own life when I read that text, because it may just interfere with the nice ladder of priorities and self-identifications that I have. Jesus says, if you belong to me, that other stuff is no longer that important, because it isn't. My problem is that when I read the news, I see people who claim to follow Jesus worshiping somebody else. And I don't want to, I've received text messages and stuff already, so I'm not going to go too far down that road to step on too many toes. But if what I already said hurts your feet, then stop right there and wonder and ask yourself, why does it hurt? Because it ain't my feet that are doing the stomping right now. To expect the unexpected means that Jesus might expose a nationalistic feeling in his followers that shouldn't be there any longer. Because he doesn't have a kingdom that is of this world. His kingdom will not come about by legislation through whatever legislative body. His kingdom is not going to come about by the executive branch or by the judiciary. SCOTUS is not going to legislate the kingdom. It won't. It will legislate a secular society, the one that we live in. The last time we had religiously motivated societies, things ended very, very bad. Very bad. My people did that. That's why some of my people came over here and became your people. And then some of your people brought other people here against their will, and that's your other people. When religion gets into this, very bad. That's why church and state shouldn't mix. They have no business mixing. So to expect the unexpected is to be challenged by the Lord who says that his kingdom is not of this world. So when I read stuff online on in the news that should give me a nice, warm, tingly national feeling, I have to ask myself, no, wait. Wait a second. Yeah, Pastor, but what about 4th of July when we kicked the British out? I'm German, so they're fine with me. But even there, not everybody is happy about the 4th of July. The people that used to live here before my people arrived here, they're not happy about the 4th of July. The people that were brought here against their will after my people arrived, Juneteenth means a lot more to them than the 4th of July. Go look it up if you don't know what that means. When you read the brilliant speech by Frederick Douglass about the 4th of July, you begin to understand that this is more than just what I think or I was taught. So yeah, even there, the warm, tingly feeling may be challenged, but it will definitely be given a good old slapping around by the Lord when he says, remember, my kingdom that you say you want to belong to, my kingdom ain't from this world. What does he mean by that? Does he mean it's from some other place, like he said? Well, yeah, because it originates in heaven. But there's more to it than that. In Matthew 20, the disciples having an argument. Nothing new under the sun, huh? Verse 24, when the 10 heard about this, they were indignant. That's a very nice word, meaning they were really angry with the two brothers. Wait, what just happened? James and John and their mom, you know, sometimes you need mom to help you, especially as mom. Mom is related to the boss, so come on, mom. You know his mom. We all family, but it's always nice to get the matriarch. Go on, mom, say stuff, you know. You say it. No, you say it. No, go on, mom. And so James and John's mom is asking Jesus, when you set up your kingdom, make sure my two sons get the top spots. One is vice president And the other one is Speaker of the House, or Secretary of State, or Chief of Staff. Give him one of those. And Jesus says, yeah, you don't know what you're asking. And they said, yeah, we do. And by then the 10 hear this and they are angry. And the reason why they're angry is not because they think, how dare they make such a request from Jesus? Don't they know that his kingdom is not of this world? No, the reason why they're angry is they also wanted those spots. And now they're thinking, oh man, James and John, they used their mom. How low can you go? Peter, where's your mom, man, when you need her? Didn't Jesus heal her? No, that was my mother-in-law. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, so they were angry because they too wanted this. And Jesus now replies to what he sees is happening among his 12 disciples. They all want the top spot. And in his reply, he says this. Matthew 20, verse 25. Then Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the high officials exercise authority over them. Yeah, we all know. That hasn't changed since then. And they wanted that job. They wanted the top job where they can exercise authority, where they can say, jump. And the people down below will say, how high? But then Jesus says in verse 26, but not so with you. Remember, this is the same Jesus that says, my kingdom is not from this world. My kingdom is run on different sets of values. And now he's explaining to them what that is. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be the first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So here, Jesus is explaining that not only is his kingdom not of this world in terms of origin, it is also not of this world in terms of quality, in terms of values, in terms of characteristic. He's saying in the world, things run that way, but not so with us. No, in my kingdom, Jesus says, things are running on a completely different schedule. In my kingdom, if you want to be great, you serve. In my kingdom, if you want to go up, you have to go down. And then he's not using somebody else, he's using himself as the prime example. Just like the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve. And not only to serve, but to give his life. And Paul picks that up in Philippians 2 when he's trying to teach the Philippians something about humility, when he says, I want you to be as humble as Jesus is. Philippians 2, starting in verse 5, when he says, let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus. And the Greek there can mean, yes, in you or among you. That's why some modern translations say, in your relationships with each other, be like Jesus. This is not just talking about how you are in yourself, but this is also how you relate to somebody else. In other words, how do we relate to each other in the church? What is the characteristics? What is the, when you look at God's kingdom, which is his people, when you look at that, what do you see? And he says, you should see the mindset of Christ. Well, what is the mindset of Christ? Who was in the very form God, but did not consider that as something to be used for his own advantage. Instead, he emptied himself. He was at the very top, but he emptied himself by becoming a human being. And being a human, just like the rest of us, being human, he now emptied himself and humbled himself even further to die on the most disgusting and inglorious way of being executed that was conceivable at the time of Paul's writing. To die on a cross, a Roman cross. That's how low Jesus went. So when he says, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom. Paul reflects that in the same way and says, this is how you reflect, this is how Jesus taught us humility, that he came being God. He didn't care about that. He gave himself for us. That's why in Philippians 2, in the previous preceding verses, Paul says, humility means that you consider others as more important than yourself, because that is how God treats us. Jesus treats us as more important than himself. That's why he came. That's why he died. That was the thing that happened in John 18 when he's talking to Pilate. My kingdom is not from this world. Because my kingdom is built on different values, different mindset, completely different. My kingdom is built on love and on compassion and on care and humility. And this, the person who says this, my kingdom is not from this world, the person who says this is part of the Trinity, the most powerful being in the universe, but also the most humble being in the universe. And so, the most trustworthy being in the universe. Because if he wasn't humble, then maybe he would be a dictator having all that power. But I'm glad he is so powerful, because if he was only humble but no power, then, well, we wouldn't even care about him. But God is both all powerful and all humble. And that's how the kingdom of God is not of this world, because that kind of thing is like, you know that emoji? With the mushroom cloud coming out of your head? Mind blown. That's so not human that we're like, whoa, what's going on? Time out. But that's the kingdom that God invites us to populate. And that, when I think about this, that is the unexpected. I mean, I'm going to close here, because if you want to read on, read the Sermon on the Mount. There are some curveballs in the Sermon on the Mount as well. Right in the first chapter, chapter 5, when Jesus is talking about how not to retaliate and how you should love your enemies and not just the people that like you. Curveballs, man. And then think about it and think, well, how do I translate that into living in New Jersey in 2018? How am I a kingdom citizen? Not a citizen of the United States, that's fine. That's by birth or by choice, by immigration and naturalization. But that's a human construct. That's human paperwork, human administration. No, God's kingdom. How am I a citizen in God's kingdom that is not of this world, that has completely different sets of value and behavior and so forth? How am I a citizen in New Jersey in 2018 of that kingdom? And you may find to be surprised as I was. I didn't expect that. But remember, in Matthew 25, Jesus says, I need you to expect the unexpected and be prepared for it. Not just the delay of the bridegroom. No, there's stuff about me that will find you that you probably didn't quite expect, but be prepared for that too. You know, if God was so easily explained and so easily understood and was so much like us in attitude, I would be a boring God. I could just go to an office. I could just get a job in the city and drive with the New Yorkers on the subway. And, you know, if I want human interaction or non-interaction and human attitude, I just go to the city. Plenty of attitude on the other side of the river. Or I just drive up and down the turnpike and the Garden State. Plenty of attitude on the Garden State too. Lord, help me to not be like them anymore. Anyway, so God is not like that. And I have to expect the unexpected when it comes to him. That he still challenges me after all these decades in church and after all these years being a pastor. He's still challenging me. You didn't expect that one, Stefan, did ya? Yeah. But that's okay. Because I want to be like the five wise bridesmaids. Be prepared and expect the unexpected. Because God is trustworthy. There's nothing that he does, says, or is that should frighten us. Because he's good. He loves us. And he's on our side. He moved heaven and earth for you. Literally. The only way to get us to him was for him to sacrifice himself. That's why Jesus came. That's how much we mean to God. So, prepare and expect the unexpected. We started out with the 10 virgins in Matthew 25. And then we found out that the person who gave that parable also described his own kingdom as something that is not of this world. So it will be a surprise to us. And still be a surprise to many of us. Or some of us. And he describes that kingdom in terms of servanthood and in terms of humility. And he gives himself as the example. And that's where we finish at the spot where we started. It is knowing Jesus, the one who is humble and who serves. It is Jesus, the one who leads this kingdom. It is Jesus, the bridegroom. It is Jesus that matters. That's who matters. And so in our interactions, in here, and in our interactions out there, wherever we find ourselves, let this mind be in us that was also in Christ Jesus. Let this mind be in us that we belong to a kingdom that is not of this world. Let this mind be in us to expect the unexpected, to always hold on to Jesus until we see him face to face. And when that role is called up yonder, I'll be there. What about you?